is all fascinating. It's all important. It all ties into what's happening here in California, which is what I want to address next. You said that the retinal epithelial cell line is ready to go if you get the resources. You have a dollar figure on that, what the resources for the clinical tests that will be necessary to get it FDA approved will run to?
Well, there are many different steps here. We're at a very early phase, and obviously we're talking about preclinical studies, and I would hate to throw a number out in the public,
right.
But they're not large numbers. So clearly that work I believe could be done with a reasonable cost.
It wouldn't take $3 billion, for example.
No, that wouldn't.
Okay.
But again, to get something into the clinic
Right.
is a far more expensive proposition. And but at the point that you've successfully carried out your preclinical trials, then you could get a pharmaceutical company or some other entity that is traditionally, getting this into the, for say three or four clinical trials to cover those expenses.
Right.
But what we're talking about, our concern here today is essentially that the amount of research going now to get this technology into the clinic is minimal. It's just a tiny amount of money. And this proposition would essentially make California, the stem cell center of the world. I mean, you would have more money here and the resources. This would jumpstart this technology, and you would effectively monopolize the entire field.
Well,
I mean, because that's a huge amount of money.
Now, you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, if you're gonna, I just had a gentleman come into my office this morning who has a son that was 15, and I guess the relatives have gone going blind at 18. Now, for him, it's the difference between he'll be blind in 3 years or 4 years,
Right.
or waiting a few extra years. Of course, it's a good idea. You're talking about literally 3,000 Americans die every day from diseases that could be treated using this technology in the future. That's a lot of people. And, every day we wait and postpone the research means it's going to have its toll in real people who die and who become blind and have limbs amputated from diabetes. I think we've sat on this far too long. We should already be in the clinic with this technology. And I think the time has come, for somebody, to put the resources in to try to help get this in the clinic so people can be helped.
Okay, now let me ask you this. You're a privately held company. You have investors' money that finance what you do. You've worked with these privately funded or the sort of NGO funded cell lines from Harvard Hughes. You've been able to do this without signing up for part of the $3 billion that Proposition 71 would put forward. And would you have been able to do it any faster or any more effectively
Well, this
if
is a
you
good
had access
example.
to this money?
This work would not have been possible without access to these private lines.
Right.
Now, Doug Melton at Harvard has these lines. He will make them freely available to any researcher that would want them.
Right.
It's just unfortunate that no one can work with them because they don't have the resources. Now, I'm not familiar exactly with the details of this bill, but I would suppose that the funding would be available to use these new robust lines that have been generated at Harvard. If that's the case, this is extremely important because, again, like I said, this discovery would not have been made if we had been restricted to the NIH-approved lines. And this is important because what this will mean now is that researchers, the entire biomedical and creative talent of the entire state of California will now be able to use these lines unrestricted.
Okay, two points. The without going into the voluminous details of the legislation, it enshrines in the California Constitution a legal right to do somatic cell nuclear transfer, presume, which I think is another way of saying embryonic stem cell research. Is it?
Well, it's basically another word, which a lot of people don't like to use, therapeutic cloning.
Right.
So that's not embryonic stem cell research per se. Embryonic stem cell research can proceed without that. The nuclear transfer is the way to solve the problem of immune rejection.
Right.
So they're related, but they're not the same thing.
Is there any difference, biologically speaking, scientifically speaking, between therapeutic cloning and reproductive cloning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the everybody in the scientific community, I don't think there's a reputable scientist alive who thinks that it's ethical or safe to proceed with reproductive cloning. The goal of reproductive cloning is to produce an identical copy of a child.
Right.
That's a whole entirely different, you know, most people find that abhorrent. On the other hand, what we're talking about for the nuclear transfer for research purposes is to create a microscopic ball of cells in a petri dish, cells that are undifferentiated. You know, these entities that we're creating, you know, are like I said, it's all done in the laboratory. So that's a whole different goal.
If you had two scientists doing, one of them was doing reproductive cloning, one of them was doing therapeutic cloning, they would follow the exact same steps to the point where they had the blastocyst, wouldn't they?
Exactly, the pre-implantation embryo.
I'm sorry?
The pre-implantation embryo, prior to implantation,
That's the same thing. So they could, one of them say, oh, I'm doing reproductive, I'm going to take it and put it in a uterus. The other one says, I'm going to do therapeutic cloning, therapeutic research. I'm going to go get in, you know, break it open, take out the cell mass and turn it into stem cells, right? But up to that point, they've been doing the same thing, haven't they? Up until that point.
Well, at the very first stages are similar, yes.
Right, okay.
But the difference being, of course, you know, that, you know, this is why we have laws. You know, you don't outlaw, you know, make millions of innocent patients suffer because there may be one or two bad apples. That's why you have laws. And I certainly don't think that anyone would be willing to face, you know, 10 years imprisonment and $1 million fine. I think that they would find another place that more appropriate to do this work. So I think, you know, what you're talking about here, and they're two totally different goals.
Right.
To create stem cells is certainly will be, my guess would be, is it would be a lot easier than, you know, somebody who may want to abuse this technology. But I would be very, very surprised, shocked, if anyone would risk the penalties associated with doing reproductive cloning there. They could go to other places where they could do it without any problem.
Okay, and in fact, whatever advances are made in the overall technology here through Proposition 71 activities would only be a small part of what would be necessary to do reproductive cloning. In other words, it's the first 1% of the process. Or is it? In other words, how much of the reproductive cloning process is subsumed within the therapeutic cloning process? In other words, would this research be of any use, not that someone would necessarily do it under the legal circumstances you've just described, but how much knowledge would be gained that would be useful in doing reproductive cloning through the study?
Well, I think it's really almost a moot issue, because the point is in the next few years, you know, the procedures and protocols for this are going to be readily available everywhere in the world.
Right.
And so what you're talking about here really is whether or not you're just simply going to hold back helping people who are dying of diseases from benefiting from this. So
okay. You're
not going to stop that. That's going to become available whether it's done in the UK where they've got the green light or wherever.
Okay.
What we're talking about now is how fast we can get this in the clinic. So that you're not going to stop that technology from getting out there. So the only decision you really have to make here is do you want to get this into the clinic sooner rather than later and help people?
Okay, talking about helping people, I wanted to address this issue. The people who are going to be putting up the venture capital here, the people
mm-hmm.
who are going to be the taxpayers of California,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be loaning, they're going to be borrowing $3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost them $6 billion to pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
And the money through the Institute for Regenerative Medicine will be going to the contractors and the construction people
mm-hmm.
and the researchers, including universities,
mm-hmm.
biotech companies.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to own the knowledge that's being created that way? And what do you know from your own experience there between investors and nonprofits
right.
and your own operations and
well, what I would suspect is whether you're in private industry or whether you're at a university, and little known fact is that the researchers at all the universities aggressively are pursuing patents as well.
Right.
So in the case of the California ballot, this initiative, this is going to be carried out in California.
Right.
So all the intellectual property rights are going to belong to either your state universities or the universities that are carrying out the work.
Right.
And so what you'd basically have is what is a remarkable thing here is you're at a very early stage of a very, very important technology, and all the discoveries, all the breakthroughs are going to be happening in the next few years, and California would essentially have a monopoly and own the future of this.
Will your company move to California to get some of the money and get
the dollars? Company already is planning to set up a headquarters out there. Yes,
okay.
It will be on both coasts.
So you'd be completely eligible. Harvard and Stanford will be represented in the operations then.
Okay. I think that, I think that what you will find here is a brain drain from not only the rest of the country but the rest of the world to California. You will end up, like I said, being the intellectual center here for this work.
I'm saying, though, let's say money goes to Stanford in Palo Alto, it goes to Geron in Menlo Park. They do different things. They get this intellectual property. The people of California will have put up the money, and the stockholders of Geron and the trustees of Stanford will own the rights to the knowledge that will be used. Is that the way it's traditionally done? Usually get a share in the fruits of their investment?
Well, the investors, if I understand this correct, will be actually the taxpayers, correct?
Yes, the taxpayers are paying.
So what would happen is I presume, the way this would play out, I mean, I'm not in California,
right.
But I would presume the money would be going off to UC Berkeley, UCLA, Stanford, most of the brightest and most creative people in the country are at those universities.
Certainly.
So the money will be going there.
Right.
And those institutes will have the licenses, and those people will be rewarded, so the state economy would basically reap the benefit. It doesn't mean they'll have a monopoly on it, but they will have the lion's share. So my guess would be the work being done in California, the lion's share of that would stay with California universities and institutions, and so the employment there and the industry would build up there.
Well, yeah, but when you have investors there at ACT, right?
Right.
And they buy stock and so on, and then when you make a discovery and make money, then they get appreciation of the stock, and they get dividends and so on.
Right.
When the people of California loan $3 billion to the, borrow in the time of the state's already borrowing $10 billion or so to pay its unbalanced budget, borrows that money and then gives it to the corporations and the universities and the research institutes to do this research, then they do the research, and then the rights to those findings that have been paid for by the taxpayers adhere to the universities and the private companies, not to the taxpayers.
I'm a scientist. I'm not a businessman, but I wouldn't look at it that way at all. I mean, I would think that this would be a very wise investment in the state university, in the education system. If the university, if UCLA and UC Berkeley and Stanford and these universities that are all California-based and they're educating California citizens, and if they're making money from this, that's less that the state's going to have to pay to run the universities. I mean, I understand that, that requires a substantial amount of money to run these public institutions. And if they're making money through licensing all this technology, it's all California.
Okay. One or two more things, and then I'll let you get back to the lab.
Okay.
The argument is made by the proponents of Proposition 71 that it's a good idea because it will drastically reduce healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm only an informal observer of healthcare cost trends, but it seems that the more high-tech things get, the more expensive they get. And I'm wondering what your take is on whether or not these methods, as they're pioneered and developed and rolled out, will reduce or raise the cost of healthcare?
Well, I think that, there are some applications that would be very expensive and some that wouldn't. So I think that, to have a custom therapy such as, nuclear transplantation, this could be quite expensive to do that for every patient. On the other hand, I do believe, when you start talking about something like diabetes, it costs the U.S. economy $100 billion a year.
$100 billion
a year. And $100 billion, again, for Alzheimer's disease. We're talking about very substantial amounts of money, and we're talking about a cell therapy. You're talking about a generic cell type. If we had, a few dozen lines that could be used for everyone, and, we can grow them up by the millions or billions in a Petri dish very easily, once those were established, this would be relatively inexpensive. I mean, I don't know if you have any idea how much it is, you know, to put a, you know, for a patient to be on dialysis or to, you know, to have a heart or a kidney or a liver transplant. These are very expensive procedures. I think that once you have the cells, they can be grown with a little media, and, you know, and they'd be inexpensive when you start applying this to very large numbers of patients. So I think that, you know, the initial cost is what it is, and then the subsequent application of it will be very much reduced, and again, it will, you know, a lot will depend on the particular disease application and how much effort is required for that. But again, many of these cell therapies are going to be very simple. For instance, when we fixed the heart attacks that occurred in these mice, it was just a simple injection of a tiny number of cells, and like I said, in a few weeks, we restored 40% of the damaged heart. I mean, that would be a relatively inexpensive procedure, certainly a lot cheaper than having somebody, you know, going through congestive heart failure and you know, and all the subsequent problems that start occurring. So
in fact, once you've solved the problem, you can essentially reproduce the treatment.
You just grow the cells. That's all you got to do.
As easily as growing on trees, right?
Yeah, easier in many instances.
Right. Okay, so why don't you close by doing this? Tell me what your vision is of, if this all works out, how broad spread and how effective can these therapies be, say, within 5 years, and what's that going to mean for Alzheimer's, for diabetes, for Parkinson's, and multiple sclerosis?
Well, you know, I don't know about 5 years, but what I would say is if you're around my age, within our lifetime, that what this will mean, and I don't think this is science fiction, I think this is very real, you know, you'll go to the doctor, if you say you get in an accident and lose your kidney, you know, you'll go, you'll get a skin cell, and we'll just grow you up a new kidney. I really think that the advances being done in stem cells and also in the field known as tissue engineering to reconstitute more complex tissues and structures are happening at such a rapid pace that I would say in the next 10 or 15 years, we're going to have the ability to really substantially change the course of most of these major diseases.
And overall, or in all ways, you think then that Proposition 71 is a good idea in order to speed that process
it's
up?
Brilliant, brilliant. I think what you're doing out there in California is unbelievable, and all the power to you.
Okay, well, thanks. What you're doing there in Massachusetts is pretty good, too. So
thank you.
thank you very much for talking to us on California Politics today.
Sure, okay. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.